are 184 days away from the 2023 college football season. This is the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the VSN Collegiate Network. I'm Kelly Ford, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Zach King. Kinger, how we doing?
Doing great, man. Dog days of winter, I'd say, Kelly. We're kind of in this limbo for sports at the moment. You know, we know college football's wrapped up. We just had the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago. Football's officially done for the year. We're right on the verge of that March timeframe. Picks up for college basketball, March Madness. Obviously, we got the combine coming up in a few weeks. So, going to get our football fix here before too long. But middle of February, everybody just kind of tastes spring right around the corner here. The dog days of winter. Everything's a grind here. But still a lot of good sports conversations in the news.
Right? No, absolutely, King. And like we said at the top, 184 days away from FBS 2023 season. That's a long way. There is plenty of sports in between now and then. Like you said, March Madness, one of my favorite events of the year. The Masters, King. Absolutely love the Masters. I know you do too. Premier League. I know you're not a big soccer fan, but we do have Premier League going on. So there's plenty of sports to keep us busy. But college football is where it's at. This is a college football podcast. We are committed this year to trying to bring more college football content during these winter and summer months than we have in the past. And I think one way, King, that we've really enjoyed doing that to this point is bringing on very cool and unique guests onto the show. And tonight is no exception. We have with us a very special guest. He is, by his own self-description, I will say, a big helmet guy, also a small college football enthusiast. We are joined today by our friend, Jerry Quickle. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely, Jerry. We had on Mike a few weeks ago, College Football Campus Tour. And as we're talking to Mike, we're getting this really unique angle on how he takes in college football. For those that listen to the episode, you know this. He travels all around the country. He hits multiple games a week, and he's taking it all in live. He likes talking to people. He likes going to the tailgates. He likes looking at the stadium. He's looking for obstructed views. He's taking photographs in his signature pose with statues outside the stadium. All of that. If you haven't listened to the episode, please do go check it out. It was awesome. But during that conversation, we kind of were talking to Mike about who are some of the coolest people you've met, or who are some of the coolest people that you've been introduced to through Twitter that also have a unique kind of approach and take and appreciation for college football. And he mentioned, yeah, you know, there's this guy in Kansas. He's got a really awesome college football helmet collection. His name's Jerry. I've done some podcasts with him, haven't met up in person, but he's someone that I think you guys should really consider trying to get on the show just to hear his story. So, lo and behold, here we are, Jerry. I've set the table for you. You have a massive college football helmet collection. Dare I say, it is the greatest and biggest private collection of football helmets in the world. I don't know that for a fact. That's a guess. I'll let you substantiate it. But Jerry, if you wouldn't mind, just share a little bit with our listeners about yourself, about your background, and then obviously we're going to get into this helmet collection as well, but anything about yourself as it pertains to college football. We know you're from Kansas. Just take it away.
Well, sure. Thanks for having me on again. I really enjoy talking about it. It's kind of a weird hobby, but it's one that I'm really passionate about. This thing, you know, it kind of started when I was a little kid. You know, the gumball helmets that you buy at the grocery store.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't go to the grocery store without, you know, dropping a quarter in and seeing who you got. So I started that when I was a kid. Now this, I'm 57, so I'm quite a bit older than you guys. I've got a little time under my belt, if you will. But my father was a high school football coach. So I grew up around the sport. He got out of coaching when he had two kids here in Kansas and, you know, needed to make some money. Back in the day, you really struggled as a teacher to try and make some money. So he went to work for Procter & Gamble at that time, and he worked for them for his whole career. But he started out as an eight-man football coach out in the middle of Kansas. He played college football at Emporia State, which is a Division II school here in Kansas. My grandfather played college football at Northwestern Oklahoma State in Alva, Oklahoma, which is a Division II school now. It's grown from a junior college all the way up through the NAIA and now a Division II school. And my son played Division II football at William Jewell College here in Kansas City in Liberty, Missouri. So I'm the only one that didn't have the talent to do it. Everybody around me did. But nonetheless, I still love the game. Little backstory, I am my first real job out of college was with Riddell, selling helmets and shoulder pads, and kind of the same scenario. I would have done that my whole life if I could have made a great living doing it. Now, back when I did this, is about 30 years ago, you know, your income was based off of your population. If you had enough schools that were in your area buying helmets, you know, it was commission-based sales. So, you know, in Kansas, we don't have a giant population. So once I started to have kids and needed to make more money, I had to move on to something else that I could make a living with. But I'd like to retire doing it right now. I'm getting close to retirement age. Nothing better than to come full circle and go back out on the road selling helmets. But that's kind of how it all started with the gumball stuff. You know, when I got into junior high school or so, you know, the Dairy Queen came out with the sundaes and a helmet. So, of course, that fascinated me. And
wait a minute, Niger. What's that there? So I'm not familiar with that, but of course I know the gumball machines. And by the time, you know, Zach and I are coming around the turn of maybe 2000-ish, not to date us too much, but around 2000, we can start remembering things. Yeah, you'd go get them at whatever sporting goods store or restaurant or whatever. And it was always, like you said, it was always a mystery. I remember the first one I ever got, Jerry, was actually a Houston Oilers helmet. Yeah. And as a Colts fan, and at the time, the Oilers, I don't believe, were in the Colts division. The Colts were in the AFC East, I think. But as a Colts fan, I remember being so just heartbroken because I was just sure that I was going to get this Colts helmet, right? Because, you know, I'm a Colts fan. I'm going to get a Colts helmet. And my dad, you know, pulls me aside. Hey, buddy, that's just how it goes. Depends what you get. We'll try again next time kind of deal. And off we went with my Houston Oilers helmet. Kinger, what was the first helmet you got? I'm sure you've done this too.
It was Packers mini helmet for sure. I was pretty much all of my gear growing up was Purdue and in Green Bay. But it's funny, you know, Jerry talking about the helmets from Dairy Queen, it kind of kicked a memory for me. I remember Dairy Queen used to have the baseball helmets that they would, the batting helmets that they used to do it. And so I remember playing Little League ball. You'd go to DQ after and you could get a team helmet based out of the Dairy Queen.
Yeah, they did it with football
back in the day. Kelly's looking shy.
I didn't know this about any sport, so please, Kelly's, go. I'm very intrigued.
So, you know, you go to the ballpark now, and you want to get some ice cream and a helmet at the ballpark. Well, that originated at Dairy Queen. It was before you could have it at the ballpark. You went to Dairy Queen, and you got that.
Wow, we're getting a little history lesson.
This is awesome.
I'm older than you guys, so let's just go back there on this deal. But, you know, they had the baseball helmets, and then they came out with football helmets, and so I was all over that, of course, in junior high school, and everybody's trying to collect all of them. That's a lot of ice cream over the summer. So, I've always been fascinated by the helmets, and you know, working for Riddell when I did really put me in a position to know some people that, you know, some other reps that are out there. If you look at my Division I helmet collection, a lot of those guys are really old. They're 90s, 90s, early 2000 style helmets, because back then when I was working for them, the other reps had saved the rejects for me because the schools weren't hip to the fact that they could actually sell that stuff and make some money. A lot of that stuff was just going in the dumpster. So the other reps would rescue some of it for me, and I put together quite a bit of stuff from the 90s and early 2000s. But another interesting part of my gig with them was I worked the sidelines at the University of Kansas and worked the home locker room, so all the home games for about 10 years. I worked over there on the sideline. Then, of course, I had kids, and my wife said, okay, enough of the being gone all day Saturday from 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. So, but we had some really cool experiences doing that as well. So I, you know, got to know some equipment guys, got to know some coaches. And as you know, the coaching fraternity is pretty small. These guys are transient. They stay at a place for a couple of years, then they move on. And next thing you know, a young kid comes up and then he moves on and everybody knows everybody in the coaching world. It's pretty cool.
So Jerry, before we dive into more details and background about the collection and how it's grown over the years and other anecdotes and stories that I know we're going to get into, I got to ask. So you were on the Kansas sidelines, you said, for about 10 years. What time frame are we looking at here? Because I'm curious, what was your favorite memory? We've had a Kansas, I'm trying to think, Kinger, we've had a Kansas State guest on. We've had a Big 12 in general guest on. We've had a Texas guest. We've had an Oklahoma guest. I don't believe to this point we've had a Kansas guest. We have TCU multiple times. Yep, can't forget that. We're getting Kansas. What was your favorite Kansas memory or moment or game, Jerry, from that 10-year period that you were working there on the sideline? And then, assuming Kansas is still your team of choice here, what's been your favorite Kansas football memory kind of your lifetime then, even if it wasn't in those 10 years?
Well, let me get to the bottom of that. I have been a Kansas fan my entire life and mostly on the football side. So what happened when my father stopped coaching, he became a pharmaceutical rep and all of his customers were doctors. Well, in the state of Kansas, if you were a doctor, you came from the University of Kansas. So he would take us as little kids to every game and put us in GA down in the end zone. And then he would go up and entertain his doctors during the game. And so my brother and I went to every game as a little kid, and we've had some very painful moments over the years being Kansas football fans, but we've also had some really good moments as well. And, you know, it's kind of a dream come true to get to work the sideline and the home locker room. Jeff Himes was the equipment manager over there for years. He became a good friend of mine. I helped him when I worked for Riddell, and even after I left Riddell, he still allowed me to come over and help. And it's an experience like none other. But one of the greatest things, the greatest moment I have was we played Notre Dame on the road in Notre Dame Stadium for the Eddie Robinson Classic. It was always the first college game of the year. And Kansas versus Notre Dame, walking down that tunnel on the backside, having Notre Dame come out of the side of the tunnel in front of us and then go down to the end and come out onto the field. Seeing it from the backside was very cool. Also, I got my dad on the sideline and I got him in the locker room with me at Notre Dame. And that's a memory you'll never forget. It was one of the greatest days of our life. We lost the ball game, but we hung around for a while. My dad and I were standing in the tunnel before the game, and the honorary captains for that game were Paul Horning for Notre Dame and Gale Sayers for Kansas. Gosh. And
come on,
they came. We were standing behind them in the tunnel, and then they came out and they did the opening coin toss. And so to see my father get to experience that with guys that he grew up idolizing was really special. So I've been a Kansas fan forever. You know, I've taken all the jokes. I've taken all of the punishment that people give on me for, you know, basketball. Yeah, we do great. But if you're over there on football game days, you're a real fan. And so that was probably the best experience I've had over there. Now, I happened to be over there at some really good times, the Glenn Mason era. You know, we were really bad in 88 and 89. Glenn Mason came to town as the head coach of Kent, and Kent came over to Kansas and just put it on us. And we hired him the next year.
If you can't beat them, hire
them. That's right. He came in and changed the culture around. Of course, we went to Aloha Bowl in 93 and in 95, which I received an Aloha Bowl ring from just for being around and helping. So that was pretty cool. But we've had some really good teams over there during that time frame. And then, of course, by the time I got out, then they hired Mark Mangino. And we all know what happened with him. Big Orange Bowl victory, ranked number two in the country at one time. And so we've seen some really hot and good highs, but man, we've seen some really bad football too. So.
And you got, I love the brutal honesty there, Jerry. And I could tell, you know, you're a true Midwestern guy through and through. The fact that you said, you even specified when we asked you, are you a Kansas fan? You said, yes, mainly Kansas football. That's definitely can't be easy in Kansas. So I guess from your perspective, I mean, how is it dealing with the Kansas State fans in Kansas, in the state of Kansas when it comes to football? Are they, is it true bitter hate and rivalry like it is with some of these other schools?
No,
what's it like interacting with them?
Kansas fans, you know, it's really kind of a weird scenario because I have friends all over in Kansas and Missouri, and Kansas fans hate Missouri. Just hate
the border,
I mean,
war.
Just hate Missouri. They tolerate Kansas State. It's like their little brother, and I know they hate it when they say that, but they really don't, they don't really get too worked up about it. Now, Kansas State, for the longest time, was as bad, if not worse, than us in football. And then the Bill Snyder thing happened. And I'm telling you guys, if anybody ever argues with you about the biggest turnaround in college football history, it's in Manhattan, Kansas, and you, there is no argument because that was the dumpster fire.
No doubt. Kelly's done some extensive, like, look at that with his numbers. It is, hands down, one of, if not the best turnaround.
Well, and
yeah, Jerry, I've gone to war on Twitter defending, and I'm not a Kansas State guy, right? Or Kansas, for that matter. I love college football in general. Those aren't my teams. But I've gone to war on Twitter defending Bill Snyder and what he did. I think, if I remember right off the top of my head here, the numbers, and so for my power ratings, I went back in history and kind of applied estimated power ratings to every college football team that's ever played at the highest level. And what Bill Snyder did was, in the 4 years prior to him coming to Manhattan, it was the second worst program in all of Division 1A at the time. In the next 10 years later, he took them to being the second best on average over the course of kind of a four-year stretch there around the late 90s, early 2000s. In all of college football. So from second worst to second best in just about a decade. Now, I know he didn't win a national championship, but what he did at Kansas State is unrivaled in terms of turnarounds, in my opinion, looking at really the totality of the history of college football and what any singular one coach has done at a program. And then you throw in the fact that he came back for a second stint, and he didn't reach that same level of highs that second time, I mean, admittedly, but he still, after he left, Kansas State kind of dropped off again. Well, as soon as he came back, he picked them right back up, and the trend line went back in the right direction. So what he, I mean, the name the stadium, name the field, put the statues up. I know they've already done most of that stuff, but he absolutely deserves it in Manhattan, Kansas.
Yeah, well, if you, and from a Kansas guy, the respect for what he did is unbelievable. You would have to, I mean, facilities-wise, I mean, you would have to understand the dredges of where they were to where they are now. I mean, it was, I mean, the very first time my dad took us over there, I mean, they had a trailer pulled up to the rim of the stadium, and that was the press box. It was a horseshoe stadium, and yeah, they had construction trailers were the darn press box at the time. So to go over there now and look at what they've built, I mean, it's a magnificent place. Yeah, they're our rival. We don't, you like getting beat by him every year, but man, you have to admire what they've done. And it all started with him. And again, yeah, they turned it over to Ron Prince, and it took a nosedive. And he was like, all right, I'm back. I can't take it anymore. I can't watch this. So,
yep.
Well, I will say, from my experience with Kansas State fans, they definitely do not seem to like the Kansas Jayhawk alum. I don't know if there is a little bit of the beatings that Kansas has given them in basketball over the years. I mean, truthfully, it has been the opposite the last couple of decades with Kansas State over Kansas in football. But there's a lot of hostility there. I know they don't like Iowa State either, but I still think Kansas trumps all. So it's interesting to hear your perspective on the other side of it, how Missouri's kind of that top team that Kansas fans dislike, with Kansas State coming in, you know, a little bit after them.
Well, the Kansas State thing is kind of like a brotherly fight. The Missouri thing is just mean. People just get mean to each other.
We hate your team. We know about that on the podcast.
We do. And I could go down a rabbit hole. I know King and I both with different feelings about conference realignment and all of that stuff. But one of the biggest tragedies, in my opinion, of Missouri leaving the Big 12 and going to the SEC was losing that annual border war game there with Kansas and Missouri. And I know they played it intermittently since, but that was one that, that certainly was a casualty of conference realignment, in my opinion. So, Jerry, as we transition into your helmet collection, and this is an audio only podcast. King and I have talked about let's upload the video to YouTube. We already do the video to help with the conversation, but for now it's just audio. As King and I are looking at you here on video, we can see, I mean, in the one screen here, dozens and dozens, I'd say upwards of 100 just in this one photo, and you're moving the camera around. Now it's at multiple hundreds that we can see there. How did this start, Jerry? And for those of you who aren't following Jerry on Twitter, you can find him at Jerry Quickle, Q-U-I-C-K-E-L, at Jerry Quickle. Look at his header photo, his banner photo. Look at any of the photos he's posted. You can get an idea of what we're talking about here. Jerry, I'm going to get to the sheer volume in a second, but what was the first full-size helmet? We know the mini helmets that you got at the store and then at Dairy Queen and all that. What was the first full-size helmet you got? I think you maybe mentioned it was in the 90s, maybe. But what was the first one, and how did it grow from there?
Okay, so the first – that's easy. The first one was 1992 Kansas Jayhawk helmet. Kansas changed their color, and Riddell put together a special color for them. And so I got one of those right out of the chute when I was working for him. So that was my first one. And of course, then it didn't take me very long to get several more of their older helmets because I had some contact over there. And of course, they had old stuff and they give me one here or there. So I have, just FYI, I have 25 different Kansas helmets in my collection.
Oh my gosh. Which I assume is the most of any one team that you have then, correct?
Yeah.
What years do those helmets span?
Well, I've got a couple of replicas from the 60s. But as far as my game helmets, I think 87, 88, 89, all the way through last year.
Those are maybe some forgettable Kansas football years from a success standpoint, but Danny Manning, right? That was 88, right? That was the Kansas Jayhawks basketball winning a championship.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There you go.
So, yeah, we've changed colors. Oregon, of course, blew the top off with all the different uniforms. And, so every team that's bad wants to change the look and change the, whatever aura around it. There, here, we're going to reintroduce ourselves. Here's new stuff. And so, of course, we've had several different looks. Charlie Weiss came in here and wrecked everything. He had several different looks. And, but it's hard to go wrong with our colors. So, it's really, really cool. So I have 25 of those at the moment.
I got to ask then, Jerry, which one, if you had to pick one or a couple, if you can't pick one, what's your favorite Kansas one that you have out of the 25?
Oh, it's no question. It's a World War II salute to service helmet. And it's a white helmet with a silver fade around the rim, but it's got a what they call the Warhawk on it. It's a 1941 mascot, but it's just the head. And then if you look at the decal, it's got rivets on it and sheet metal mark on it. There was a World War II fighter squadron called the Jayhawk Squadron. And that is modeled after the fighter squadron. And it's a salute to all of the Jayhawks that were in World War II. So that was, it's a pretty, now we beat Texas 2 years ago in that massive overtime game down there. We wore that Warhawk down there. So you can see that one in that game. It's a pretty cool special helmet for me. And I certainly dig it.
That is awesome. And I was going to, you beat me to the punch on the next question. I was going to say, in what game or games or eras did they wear that helmet? And you just said probably no bigger game than that win at Texas.
Yeah, they switched it up in that one. I think they wore a red face mask with it there, but the original one, they wore a gray face mask with it, a silver fade around the bottom. So it's the decals hung around. We've worn it, I think, once a year for the last 5 or 6 years. But the original one actually had a different fade around it. So it was kind of a cool paint job.
When Mike goes to get College Football Campus Tour, when Mike goes to games, he's taking in the stadium and doing all that stuff. When Jerry's at the games or watching the games, he's paying attention to what color the face mask is and what the helmet decor is like. It's incredible. I love it. That's exactly why I wanted to have you on here, Jerry, to give us this perspective on college football and a unique way to take it in. So you said, Jerry, you know, 1992, early 1990s, when you got that first one, it was through your connections with Riddell and at Kansas. So, and you said it didn't take long to get a couple more as they were changing things over.
Yeah.
At what point did you decide, hey, I could actually, you know, really start a collection here of not just Kansas, but just of helmets in general? Did that come right away, or was it not until years later that you were like, this could be something pretty cool?
Oh, it's kind of an obsession, you know. Equipment managers trade helmets. So they'll keep around rejects from, you know, a helmet's only good for 10 years. Once it passes 10 years, it outdates and they will not recertify it. So you can't wear it for over 10 years. So that's the little secret, that everybody's got them. They've got them laying around in equipment rooms and back rooms. Sometimes they pitch them. Well, the bigger schools now have figured out that they can sell them. And so pretty much every year they're going to sell off, you know, 15 or 20 of those. You might notice Army Navy now does a very special helmet each game that they play. Those helmets are actually pre-sold through the universities as fundraisers. Now, you have to have giant money to get involved with that, which I do not have.
Yeah. I can imagine so.
I don't know what they sell them for, a couple $1,000 a piece. But people pony that up, and they know which helmet they're going to get at the end of the game. And then they turn around and ship them out. But I kind of pride the fact that I have all of these and I don't buy them. I network, and of course social media has taken off over the last couple of years for me. And
have you ever bought a helmet?
I have, but I just certainly can't go at this volume.
That's what I'm imagining. I mean, looking at that collection, like from a value perspective, that's got to be pretty hefty right there. So the fact that you've been able to use your connections and your network like that, I mean, that's the beauty of the network in this world right there.
Yeah.
The fact that you've been able to acquire that's pretty amazing right there.
Well, to me, that's the fun of it. The fun of it is meeting the people. And, you know, Mike's the same way. He goes out and he sees these stadiums. But I think the thing he enjoys the most is the people and the relationships he's made at all these different places. And, I've certainly done that as well. And I'm the same way he is as far as looking at stadiums. I've been a traveling salesman my whole life. I've been across this country all over the place in the middle of the week by myself. So what do you do when you do that? Well, I went to every Major League Baseball park. Okay, checked all those off my list. Went to a whole bunch of minor league parks. Went to a bunch of college games and watched baseball games. Watch college hockey everywhere I went. Well, I go to all the stadiums, all the schools. I look around. I start talking to folks. I tell them what I do. I'm undefeated in person. If you're there on campus and you talk to them and you show them genuine interest in their program and you talk about what you do and they are happy to give you something, It's amazing to me that when you're in person talking to folks. Now, of course, social media has blown it up enough now that I would say more than half the time I walk in, they know who I am already, which is really weird to me.
you're a celebrity in this world, Jerry.
It's very weird to me that somebody would recognize me, but that does happen a lot. In the football world, when I do show up,
I'm undefeated in person. That's the tagline of the episode. That's gotta be my motto moving forward. I love that. I'm undefeated in person.
I got I got to start talking to Jerry about my day job here, right? Jerry, I'm also a salesman as a profession as well. I'm in technology sales, but that statement that you made right there, undefeated in person, that's always what we're trying to get to as a salesperson, right? Is get that in-person meeting, establish the relationship. That's the key right there. And clearly you mastered it, undefeated in person. That's not a record I can say I have, but I'm hoping I can work to improve to get closer to your level one day.
Certainly not in the business world. I've been defeated several times, but in this world, I mean, if you're just genuine enough, and I am about this hobby, I am truly passionate about getting a helmet and then exposing the school that gave it to me and trying to promote their school. I'm absolutely enthralled with learning about them. I love to learn about the schools, the conference that they play in. You know, what are their road trips like? are you on a bus for 9 hours? Or are you on it for 30 minutes? What's the deal? I mean, some of these conferences are just strung out all over the place. And that'll get us right back around to what I really like, and that is small college football.
There we go. And I was building up to it, Jerry. We set the stage enough, though. We built the suspense. I got to ask so that the listeners, because we can see it, and we don't see all of it. We just see what's behind you in this one room. But for the listeners, what is the number that you're at now, Jerry? How many helmets have you collected? And then also break it down for us estimate-wise. How many are FBS? How many are FCS? How many are D2? How many are D3? How many are NAIA? How many are JUCOs? I mean, you've got them all, right? So just break down, not to the number, but just estimate here, because small college football, that's what you said. You're self-proclaimed enthusiast for that. That's your background. That's all of that. So just how many, and break it down for us.
Well, let me spitball this. So there's four, I believe it's 484 right now. So I'm closing in on 500. I have every Division I school with the exception of Old Dominion, Georgia State, and I'm going to draw a blank. There's a third one. I'm going to draw a blank.
I'm making it my personal mission to get you one of those two.
That's what I'm saying, dude. We got to start reaching out to connections, our network here. We got to see what we can do to help Jerry get one of those.
We're getting them for you, Jerry.
FCS, Division I FCS, I believe I'm in the 60s on that. I think it's 60s or low 60s. That's interesting because I've almost got the whole Big Sky. I'm one short there with Northern Colorado, but the HBCU schools, SWAC conference, I've got half of those, but that's a real challenging category for me. I don't get a lot of response from people when I email response, or when I show up on campus, it's a different story. But I struggle with that, and I struggle with Ivy League schools. So it's really weird. I believe I have three of those. So
is there a reasoning behind that? You think that that's the case?
I have no idea. I can't explain it. I reach out, I try. I just don't get to enough of them in person. I tell you, one of the best experiences I've ever had was at Southern University in Baton Rouge. I just showed up on campus and those guys, that was awesome. They showed me around. We sat in the equipment room and shut the bowl for a while. Some of the coaches came in. Great experience, but I can't.
Yeah, great game day experience down there at Southern, I've heard.
Yeah. It's
let me ask you, Jerry. So I work in the Horizon League for my full-time job. While we don't sponsor football, we do have a couple members who play football at other conferences. Do you have Youngstown State and or Robert Morris University?
Neither one. Neither one. Youngstown State's kind of a sore subject with me because I've had 100 people reach out to somebody over there trying to get something, and I can't even get a response. And they rub salt in the wound. They broke out that giant penguin helmet this year, which was one of the coolest helmets I've ever seen. And I can't get anybody to respond. Well, so that and Robert Morris, I was actually on campus at Robert Morris, but I was there at night. And nobody was around.
Well, Jerry, so, I don't often get to say this to our guests, but I have a direct line to both the athletic directors at those schools, and we're going to make this happen for you. I'm going to get you Youngstown and Robert Morris. Hey, Kinger, I'm putting you on Old Dominion and Georgia Southern, or Georgia State, excuse me. Have fun with those two, King.
All right, I'll take that responsibility. I don't have the
Georgia Southern. That's the third.
All right, we got all three. All right, so I don't have quite the connections that Kelly does here in the college football world, but I do got some sales skills, so maybe we'll start throwing out some prospecting emails. We'll see if we can create some connections for you there, Jerry.
Mike has got some really big connections at Georgia Southern, and it's just I think that one's a matter of time of him going back, and when he's back there. Mike's done a really a neat job of hooking me up with three or four that I had struggled with that he was at Fordham. He was at Fordham one night and mentioned me to these guys, and they were happy to send it. And let's see who else he sent me. Oh, East Tennessee State. He's got a buddy down there. And that was one that I struggled to get. And Mike was down there for a game. So he got that for me. And
that's awesome. And yeah, I'm serious. I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to reach out to these people. We're going to get it done for you. Jerry, you talked a couple times now about the networking and about how that's your favorite part of this too. You talked about when you're down at Southern, you've talked about other places you've been, how much fun it is just to get in there, talk with the equipment folks, shoot the bull, like you said, and just have a good time talking college football, sharing experiences, all that stuff. What has been, and I realize this, like when we, Mike was like, I'm not going to rank the stadiums, right? Because that's just asking for trouble. And so maybe asking for trouble here too. But just tell us some of the favorite stops that you've had, whether it's because of the people you met or just the really cool, stadium that you were able to see behind the scenes. You talked about your experience at Notre Dame earlier, obviously, with your dad, which is incredible. Just what are some of your favorite experiences and or people that you've met throughout this process? Because I think King and I would agree with you and Mike and others that we've had on. It really is about the relationships. I mean, we see that on Twitter every day. We see that in our real lives with real jobs. That's where it's at. So tell us about some of your favorite.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go small school on you because, that's really what I like. My daughter moved to Phoenix a couple of years ago. And, in the state of Arizona, you either play high Division I football or you play at two NAIA schools and there's nothing else. So they have Arizona, Arizona State, Northern Arizona, and then they have Ottawa University of Arizona, which is in Surprise, and then they have Arizona Christian. And those two are NAIA schools. So there's no Division II, Division III. They killed the entire junior college system out there about 5 years ago. Used to be
It used to be pretty strong, right? Yes, I remember it being. Yeah,
the hotbed for junior.
I didn't know
college.
They killed it.
They killed it throughout the system. So there's only five places you can play. Phoenix is the fifth or sixth largest metropolitan area in this country. Not everybody's a Division I kid. So, Ottawa University and Arizona Christian. When I went out to visit my daughter, I drove over. I met Coach Nesbitt over at Ottawa University, and I tweeted that I was going to stop by and see if I could find somebody at both places. And I got a response from both of them before I came that said, "Hey, here's my number. Text me when you get here." And Ottawa University is 5 years old. I believe this will be their sixth season. It was built from scratch in the middle of nowhere. It's right next to the Royals and Rangers spring training complex. And Coach Nesbitt was at West Texas A&M, which is a Division II school. He came over to Surprise, and he started that program. And they're in the playoffs pretty much every year now in a very short period of time. Guy didn't have to do that. He texted me back off of Twitter, just messaged me. And then when I got there, he showed up and he showed me around everywhere. He introduced me to a bunch of people. It was really neat. Guy just went out of his way. Now they have I know of Ottawa University because they have a sister school in Kansas in the NAIA. That's Ottawa University, and it's in Ottawa, Kansas. And they actually share the same board, and they're an offshoot of the Ottawa University that's here. They've got a brand new coach that's been there. They've had the same coach. Coach Kessinger had been there for 20 plus years. He retired. And so they hired Nick Davis. He came in. Nick Davis brought a helmet to my house.
That's service right there.
He got a new look.
We're talking about service.
He showed up at my house and came to my house because he wanted to see this, and he brought me their new look to put on my wall. And so those are some really cool experiences there with some small college guys. Of course, most of the guys in Kansas have given me something. So I think there's only one school left in Kansas that I don't have, and that's Dodge City Community.
Okay.
College,
so. I was getting ready to go there, Jerry. We were talking a little bit about the JUCO in Arizona earlier. So I happen to know that JUCO football in Kansas is a pretty darn big deal. And you talked about Dodge City there.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with, and I'm sure many of our listeners are as well. I know Kinger has watched it too. Last Chance U. I believe there were two or so seasons taking – obviously, it started at East Mississippi Community College. Then it moved up to Kansas, and I know there were mixed reviews – mixed reviews about the coach and all that stuff. And I don't – we don't have to get
yeah,
too –
Yeah, the real JV.
There you go. Yeah. So maybe you have some inside scoops there. I was going to say, we don't have to go down that road, but I'm certainly open to it. So I was going to ask, you have all the ones in Kansas except for that one. Obviously, it's a massive JUCO – following or environment there in Kansas. How often do you get out to see some of those JUCO games? And were you around when the Netflix crew, were you at any of the games that the Netflix crew had? No.
So first of all, most of the junior college football in Kansas is in rural Kansas. So Dodge City and Garden City are they're 6 hours from here. I live in the Kansas City metro area. The closest one to us is Highland, which is an hour and a half away. Fort Scott was very close to us, and they dropped their football program 2 years ago. So, but if you get down by Wichita, which is, Butler Community College, Coffeyville Community College, you've heard of Garden City. You've heard of some of these guys. Independence was one of the bottom feeders of the Jayhawk Conference, which is the big JUCO league here. They changed the rules. The rules used to be you could bring in, I believe it was 11 or 12 kids from out of state. So you had to, it was a true community college system here. It was for the community. So any kid from the state of Kansas, especially a lineman, everybody wanted at the JUCO level because they wanted to use their skilled positions on those 12 out of states they could bring every year. They were getting to the point where they couldn't compete for national championships at that level. So they changed the rules. That's when you saw Independence and Jason Brown and that whole crew come in, and their entire roster was from out of state. So when they changed the rules, that's when they got good. And of course, Garden was good. And I think they were 1-2 in the country that year when they were playing each other. But yeah, it's multiple pros every year come out of that system. So it's fantastic football. Not exactly desirable places to to live for a semester or a year. But yeah, if you've got a issue and you need to showcase your skills, or you have some grade issues or something like that, it's certainly a place to go prove yourself. That's for sure.
No, that's awesome.
I mean, heck, Tyreek Hill played for Garden City Community College.
That's right. So. Yeah, that's right. Little known fact, I think, for most, but, good point. Jerry, I've got just a few more, and I know King might have another one or two. I asked you about what your favorite Jayhawk helmet was earlier, and you shared the one about the World War II, honoring the World War II veterans. What is that your favorite one that you have in the entire collection then? Or, and if so, what's your favorite non-Kansas one then?
Okay. Yeah, that is my favorite one overall. I would say there's a couple, and it's going to sound weird, but Delaware is the, you know.
No, they're the winged helmets, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No. So, Jerry, you're talking to an Ohio State fan here. I cannot stand that winged helmet. I can't stand it because of Michigan, but I know. Did Michigan actually steal it from Delaware, or did Delaware take it from Michigan? Somebody stole it from the other. I don't remember.
Princeton.
Or Princeton. That's right, Princeton. They all stole it from Princeton.
The original wing.
They all stole it from Princeton. That's right.
I believe the coach from Princeton left and went to Michigan, and took it with him. I believe the wings were designed because of the forward pass. They wanted to be able to see their receivers. That's why they invented the wing thing. But Delaware's really cool because, you know, it's all paint. It's a lighter blue. It's more of a royal blue. And then the gold, both of them are metallic paints. So it's got quite a neat look to it. So Delaware's one of my favorites. Central Arkansas is one of my favorites. It's a gunmetal gray.
You see it? Oh, yeah.
It's a unique color. Paint color on it you don't see often, so it's a gunmetal gray, and it's got you know, the bear head, but it's got metallic decals, so the decals have flake in them, so it's a real sharp looking helmet. Division two,
UCA, one of the four schools that has the colored turf.
Yes, they have the stripes. It's gray and purple.
I actually moved to Conway out of college. I took my first job down there. So I lived basically right on the University of Central Arkansas's campus. So I'm familiar with the school. I didn't go watch a game there, which, again, that was talking with Mike about that. We actually had this conversation. That's something I regret. I don't know. I definitely wasn't doing anything better on my Fridays and Saturdays down there in Arkansas. But I agree with you on the UCA helmet. Very sharp. And I personally like their field as well.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, there's another school there in Conway as well. Well, there's a
yes. What's it? It's a tiny Baptist Hendrix school. I'm trying to think of what Hendrix. Yes, I couldn't.
Jerry, do you have Hendrix helmet, Jerry? There it is.
Yeah. It's actually. Where is it? It's right there.
do you got Wichita Baptist from down south there in the state of Arkansas?
Yeah, the only.
There it is.
Oh, Hendrix.
Hendrix. Wow, man, that's bringing it back. I know for the listeners, they can't see here, but seeing the gold shield helmet right there, that's a logo I have not seen in about 6-7 years now. Wow.
The state of Arkansas. I've started posting pictures of just lately of just everybody that I have from that state. And so Arkansas, I did a picture of Arkansas, and there's only two that I need. Southern Arkansas, which is a great mascot. They're the Mule Riders.
Oh my God.
Never. And then Arkansas Baptist is an HBCU school in Little Rock that is the Buffaloes. So those are the two that I need from Arkansas. I have everything else. But, yeah.
I know I had a couple of buddies who played for Wichita Baptist when I was down there, the Tigers. And I know the Arkansas schools really well. And a lot of those schools that you mentioned, I'm sure a lot of people definitely wouldn't recognize, I would say, potentially for a lot of people. And the fact that you got those helmets, you're definitely probably one of the very few out there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, the Great American Conference is the big Division II conference there. And they've got some of the greatest mascots in Arkansas. I mean, of course, you know, the Razorback, but Arkansas Monticello are the Bull Weevils. The Arkansas Tech are the Wonder Boys. Southern Arkansas is the Mule Riders. So it's very unique mascot in the state of Arkansas. But yeah, I'm weird that I know that.
I love it. I think it's fantastic.
So I will have to say my favorite Division II helmet. When people ask me this question, I go by division because that's just, it's easier to separate it that way for me. Colorado Mines has a awesome looking helmet. It is a navy blue I'm going to grab it because it's right. And I know your listeners can't see it, but I'm going to describe it. It's a matte navy and it's got a pack mule on the side of it with a stick of dynamite in its mouth. And it's, you know, they're the ore diggers. And so it's a chrome decal on the side of a matte Navy helmet. It's really a cool look. Plus, they're pretty darn.
Everybody good. Should shoot the shoot a Google search to the Colorado School of Mines to check that helmet, because Jerry is not kidding. It is an angry donkey with a stick of dynamite on the side. Probably one of the most unique I've seen. It's an awesome logo.
When I see it, Jerry, the first thing I think of, I don't know why, for right or wrong, is Don Quixote. I don't know if I'm right on that or wrong, but that's my first instinct when I see that thing.
I believe this guy's name is Blaster. That's their mascot.
Okay. That's the mascot.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool one. There's some really neat looking, I mean, Pacific Lutheran, a Division III school out of the Portland area, has got a freaking giant guy with a crusader with a sword and a shield on the side, and it's oversized on one side. Really neat look. And then of course there's all the traditional helmets that are out there that don't change, you know, don't ever change them.
I can imagine it's very tough to pick. And I kind of want to wrap up my section on the questions here, Jerry. You made a comment earlier today, you know, talking about the length that certain helmets basically need to be refreshed, or they have to be recertified, or they can no longer be certified, say that correctly, after 10 years. So after doing this, you know, for, you know, 25 years of collecting helmets, I saw on your news segment on your Twitter feed, your posted tweet that the local news came down into the story and said that, you know, you would occasionally put a helmet on in the basement. You're messing around by yourself. I got to ask you, do you have any photos of you in the helmets? Because me personally, I'd probably be taking photos, individual photos of me in every single helmet just to say I did it. And then secondarily, if you look at, say, the technology that you saw, you look at these helmets in the 90s versus some of the more recent ones you've had now, is it pretty amazing? Can you really automatically tell the difference? And you're like, how were these guys playing in these helmets back in the 90s? Is it pretty mind-blowing?
Yeah, it's well, I've got some older stuff too. I've got a couple leather helmets. I've got to see the old suspension helmets from the 60s, late 60s and the 70s. You know, we call them cobweb helmets, but it was basically Riddell designed it off of the Army helmet, which was a cobweb netting in there that you,
like the World War II, like army helmets that they would wear. Yeah.
Suspended your head within that shell was the idea behind it. But if you look at that, you look into the 70s when companies like Kelly were around making these helmets, Wilson, some of these, you look at those and you go, well, no wonder guys were dying from CTE. I mean, it's nothing more than a piece of plastic with foam padding glued on the inside of it. And now they're complete systems. I mean, you can actually buy a helmet that's over $1,000. If you look at that weird Riddell helmet that came out this year, the Axiom, there are several NFL guys wearing it, and you notice it because you don't see the face mask. The face mask looks really weird. But that helmet is a customized helmet for each head. They put a little look like a water polo hat on a guy, and they scan. It's got electrodes in it. They walk around, they scan, and then the liner on the inside of that is customized to fit that head specifically. And you can actually take a communication system and put in that helmet that is a sensor underneath the padding. If you take a blow that's deemed to be too hard to a certain spot, it'll page the trainer, tell you which player, what kind of blow he took, what side of his head, the back of his head, the front of his head, tell you exactly where he got hit. So you're alerted that kid took a hit that was unusual. Now, those kind of systems, I believe they're called IQ systems, those kind of systems are very expensive and really not realistic for a lot of high schools. But when you get into the, big Division I schools and the pros, that kind of technology could save people. So it's really interesting. I have a couple of the IQ systems in a couple of helmets of mine that, you know, has the liner underneath everything. That's just basically a sensor. But you can Google Riddell Axiom and watch these guys build a helmet on YouTube for a guy that's doing a tour of the facility. And it's really neat how they do it. But
yeah, the technology and everything.
That's a long answer to your question, but yes, from the days of when I was in high school to the days now, it's no question that the equipment is so different and it is so much better. I would imagine as time goes by, you'll start to see those numbers go down as far as CTE and some of the things that go along with playing the sport. So,
yeah, very interesting. And again, you know, the amount of technology that in research that these organizations like Riddell and some of these other ones that are putting into the helmet technology now, you know, they're spending a lot of money into it. And the sensors, that's a whole different level, something else that I'm learning about here tonight. But I mean, you just look back at days from, you know, when Kelly and I were kids, late 90s, early 2000s, like you said, starting to really process and remember football. I mean, you just look at these guys, the big old shoulder pads, the old school helmets that just still look super thin. And I mean, you see Aaron Rodgers out there. I'm sure he's got a new helmet, but again, I'm a Packers fan. He looks like he's still wearing a helmet from back in the 90s, and it's probably got to feel so different on your head, you know, now compared to what we used to playing football growing up, and you know, just what all these pros used to wear. It's got to feel completely different.
Yeah, it's kind of a risk reward on certain positions. You know, a lot of the skilled position guys like to wear that Chet. I forget what the name of it is, but it's a Chet helmet, but it's lighter, or a I believe it's a Visus that Patrick Mahomes wears. Those are lighter, and so they feel like they can do more with their head, but they also don't protect like some of the other things that are out there. So you got to kind of risk reward on what you're using, but they allow them to choose these days because of the liability. In the old days, you went in the equipment room at your high school and this is all you had. And we have this. And now there's a legality. There's a lot of choices that are allowed to be made on certain things.
Hearing you guys go into the variations and the differences between just brands of helmets, styles of helmets, different padding, it's incredible. The extent of my experience with the helmets is in NCAA football, like legend mode or race for the Heisman or whatever it was, when you get to like pick your player and make them and all that, and you can customize your helmet type. That's really the extent of mine. I always went with like a Pro Revolution 2, I think it was. I thought it looked the coolest. I don't know, for either the quarterback or running back I was playing as. But Jerry, I have a couple more questions, and one of them actually I just got reminded of because when King asked about the Channel 41 news story, which is pinned to your Twitter page, that reminded me, wasn't there something this past football season was it ESPN or Game Day or Big Noon Kickoff? Didn't one of the major networks run a story on you or come out and see your collection?
It was, I'll tell you how that worked. I did something really stupid one day. I decided my wife was out of town. I was going to deep clean my basement. So I started taking all these upstairs and out into my yard. And of course, what a mistake that was when you realize how many trips that is up and down the stairs. But eventually I got them all out there and they were just in a pile. And I thought, well, why don't I just line them up and take a picture while I've got it out here. And I took a little video walking around it. And then I took a still photo of it. I backed my truck up to the street and had to put a ladder in the back of my truck so I could get them all in the frame. But I didn't really think about it at the time. I tweeted out the video portion of it, and it got a couple of retweets here by guys with a lot of followers. And then I got a direct message from ESPN that said, hey, is this your content and can we use it on our platforms? And I was just like, sure.
That's all.
Whatever. Well, they tweeted it out, and then CBS Sports tweeted it out, retweeted all this stuff. And the next thing you know, my phone died because it just wouldn't stop. The alerts wouldn't stop coming. And so it went, I believe it was a 2 million views. It was crazy. And I literally was doing nothing but trying to clean my basement. And then cars driving by started stopping and taking pictures of it. And I just didn't realize how insane it was until I got it all out on the yard. But and then, of course, Kansas started the season 5-0, and College Game Day announced they were going to come to town. And so some of my Twitter followers and some guys locally around here tried to get me on College Game Day, and that's what that was. I wasn't on College Game Day. They had other stuff to do, I guess. But it really took another level when they tried to get me on the College Game Day. It started getting – people were tweeting at ESPN, and it really took off again on that. So I had a pretty good 5 or 6 week run there.
No, that's awesome, and I think it's so cool. Like you said, it was such an innocent origin there. I was really just trying to clean the basement or whatever, and I think it's really cool that you were able to get them all in one place, showcase that, put it out there, and that all these people were interested in it and wanted to engage and interact with you. I mean, shoot, that's one of the first times I think I saw you on social media was during all of that, and I was like, who is this guy? This is incredible. So I'm so glad we've been able to connect and have you on and learn more about the story. My final question, Jerry, and then we'll let you go. My final question is, you've mentioned her a few times at various points throughout this past, hour that we've been talking about your helmet collection. I will preface this with, I have a wife, and I my helmet collection, it doesn't even hold a candle to yours. What I have is probably 3 or 4 different sets of every Power 5 conference. Now, I'm talking the mini 2-inch pocket helmets, right? Like the very little ones, the ones that would come out of the gumball machines that we talked about. But over the course of, you know, every 2 or 3 years, Riddell and, I don't know if it was Dick's Sporting Goods or whoever, would put out an updated Big Ten helmet set, ACC helmet set, Big 12 helmet set. Okay, so I'd get them every time it came out. So I have 4 or 5 sets of every Power 5 iteration. I have 2 full sets of every other FBS conference. So basically, 2+ sets of FBS, 1 full FCS set, but then that's it. I don't have any NAIA, D2, D3, none of that. And I have a display wall where I have all the FBS helmets up in a nice, tidy order. Doesn't take up much space. And sure, the rest of them are in boxes and storage in the basement. My wife, I have a hard enough time being able to keep the 133 now FBS helmets up on the wall. We have a couple small kids now who like to play with them and all that, so I think that helps with it. You got to share with us, what does your wife think of your helmet collection as we're looking live at your basement behind you and our listeners are trying to take this in through our words? What does she think of this? I'm hoping she's supportive. Otherwise, I feel like she would have been out of here by now. But just, what's your wife think of this? How much crap does she give you for it? Does she say, Jerry, you're so weird, I don't know what this is all about? Or is she just as into it as you are?
No, she's not into it like I am. But I've been married for 32 years. She knew what she was getting into. They've always been around because, you know, when we got out of college and I started working for a helmet company, you know, I always had samples laying around. I always had shoulder pads laying in the garage, or I had this or I had that. So she was kind of immune to it. Now, she does roll her eyes periodically.
Don't all wives, though. But
the agreement is, if they don't come out of the bay, if they don't leak up into the rest of the house, it's fine. I can do whatever I want down here in the basement. They're getting painfully close to leaking, though. But no, she's a trooper about it. She just keeps asking me, how can we monetize this? I've done, I don't know, 50 podcasts in the last year, probably. Of course, we've had TV out to the house a couple of times. I've been on a couple of national radio shows. I have fun with it because I just enjoy talking about it. But she's like, man, there's got to be some money in this somewhere. How do we charge rent or admission? I don't know what you do with it, man. I guess someday I'll lease it to a bar and let them have everything in the bar, and they can, have my name on it or something there. My kid's going to want, I got a 30-year-old son. He's going to want of it. But just had a grandson a couple weeks ago, too. So we'll see what he likes when we grow up. Maybe he'll want some of it,
too. That's awesome. And, Jerry, I will say, your wife and my wife, I think they're going to be best buds. I swear, Jerry, if my wife asked me one more time how I'm going to monetize the K-Ford ratings, I'm like, her name's Carly. Carly, I don't know. I'm just trying to have fun with it. Whatever happens, happens. Like you, Jerry. We're just trying to have fun with it. Jerry's walking around the basement right now, showing us on camera all of the helmets, all 484 of them. As they are, Jerry, they are leaking up the stairs here.
Leaking up the stairs.
It is absolutely... It is absolutely incredible. Jerry, we're going to post this episode on Thursday. What I'll do is ask you to post just a short video underneath the link to this episode on Twitter so that people, our listeners, can see this as well, because it truly is an incredible collection. And just thank you again so much for joining us tonight. This has been awesome. It's definitely unique. King and I are striving to bring a different take, a different perspective on college football. And King, I think we could say we accomplished that one tonight.
No doubt. Always love having people on who are passionate about college football and their individual niche. You know, the helmet guy that you are, Jerry, I could tell how much you love doing this, how much you enjoy talking about it, and just the experiences that you've had over the way. It's been great listening to the story and just another connection that we've made here in the college football world. We really appreciate you coming on the show with us.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It is a lot of fun, and it's meeting guys like you that makes it fun. So I appreciate you guys calling me up and put me on your show.
Absolutely, Jerry. Thank you again so much. Just one more time, everybody. If you're not already following Jerry on Twitter, you can find him at Jerry Quickle, JerryQuickel, Jerry Quickle on Twitter. Please give him a follow. You can see the photo in his banner on his profile page of that photo he took from the ladder of his truck to get all 484 in there in his front yard. It's absolutely amazing. So, Jerry, thank you again so much. Thank you all for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll be back in short time with another episode. But until then, this has been the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the BSN Collegiate.